You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today, I continue my exit interviews, breaking down each player's strengths and weaknesses, looking ahead, of course, at what happens with them next season. And make sure to check out previous episodes if you haven't already. And please leave a review about the show. With me is a special guest to help talk about a special Heat player. He's a longtime, many time frequent guest of this show. I think you're on your fifth or sixth appearance. I had Michael Pina on here a little while ago. And, you know, he was kind of Paul Simon to your Tom Hanks or vice versa as far as hosting or being a guest on this show. So anyway, this is Rohan Nadkarni. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Five or six seems low. How far back does that count go?
I don't know. Maybe, you know, it seems like he's been on the show a few times. You've been on the show a few times. I feel like we've been planning a lot about getting you on the show, but maybe you haven't been on as often as I think.
I see. All right.
It's possible. Look, we've talked a lot about your great stories for SI. You've done some incredible, including, of course, your cover story on Dwayne Wade. You know, we go back a long time as far as being on the show. So, you know what? Maybe it is more than six. But either way, it's great to have you back here because today, a special talk about Jimmy Butler. I mean, I don't know how else to go into it, but other than just talk about his incredible one season here. He was a subject of trade talks for years, linked to Miami, back to his days in Minnesota. Then he spent that one season in Philadelphia, of course. And then finally, on July of last year, which seems like an eternity ago, Jimmy Butler finally joined the Miami Heat. And we weren't quite sure about what to expect, whether or not there was going to be some kind of locker room damage there, whether or not he was going to be the cancer that everybody made him out to be, whether or not he was going to be, in his own words, a complete and total asshole. In fact, he wound up being the exact opposite. He was a great fit, incredible camaraderie, and he wound up helping propel Miami to a deep playoff run, including two wins in the NBA Finals to a superior team in the Lakers, unfortunately. But Jimmy, a great year here, and this is a segment where we talk about all of his strengths. There are so many. Rohan, does anything stand out to you as far as one of Jimmy's great strengths with Miami?
I think it's really been his adaptability, and I think we saw that during the playoffs. He really, I think during the playoffs, showed that he was willing to take on any role the team needed him to take on a given night, whether that was facilitating, whether that was turning into a superstar scorer as he did for a couple games in the finals. We saw in the Bucks series how, you know, he wouldn't really like to get going in the first half and become the fourth quarter closer. Whether it was in the finals guarding LeBron as much as he did, I really think it's just his adaptability. Doing what the team needs him to do on a given night, he's willing to do whatever it takes, play whatever role. He's not the kind of guy who I think says, okay, I'm doing this, like, everyone has to figure this out around me. It's more so, okay, what does the team need tonight? That's what I have to do.
I've made a point before, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, but I don't think anybody short of LeBron James has the ability to morph into whatever the game or situation needs as well as Jimmy does. Like, I think other superstar level players or top 10, 15 players, wherever you rank Jimmy personally, like they're usually playing at one speed in one certain way. LeBron, for the most part, can afford to step back a little bit and then turn it on, be more of the playmaker, be more of the aggressor when it comes to his scoring. And I think for Jimmy, you see shades of that, not as effectively because LeBron is one of one, but with Jimmy, I think he also has that ability to kind of say, all right, now's the day where I need to get Goran or Tyler going. Now's the day where I'm looking for Bam to get his shot going a little bit. And then, as you pointed out, turn it up a notch when it comes to the fourth quarter or in closing time.
I mean, we saw that play out to a degree, I think, in the playoffs. What you're talking about, which are the guys in the league who can do that? You know, I think Giannis struggled to adapt against the Heat. Now, whether that's him, whether that's his limitations, whether that's coaching limitations, people can argue that, but, you know, Giannis was so up and down in that series up until he hurt his ankle. It looked like he wasn't really sure the best way to assert himself. He never really took control of that series. We saw it with Kawhi Leonard in the second round. Down the stretch of those Clippers Nuggets games, you know, it was kind of shocking. The Clippers, it felt like if they just run, you know, 10 pick and rolls in a row, maybe they'll be able to start breaking down Denver's defense, but that's not the kind of game Kawhi wants to play or Paul George wants to play. and, you know, ended up costing them to a degree. The Heat, I think you bring up a great point. Jimmy is kind of willing to do whatever. I mean, after Anthony Davis guarded him, he started to become a screen setter, or just, you know, willing to work in those wrinkles. It makes him such an important part of what Spo wants to do. Spo's always talking about positionless and guys kind of doing everything on the floor at all times. That doesn't work unless you have superstars like Jimmy who are willing to buy it.
That's a great point. And I think we've been kind of building up to this. The more we talk about system fits, guys like Tyler Hero being able to flourish, Jay Crowder to a certain degree when his shot is not falling is not nearly as effective. And of course, then you have the multi-dimensional, multifaceted superstars like Bam and Jimmy. And with them, they bring a unique style of play. And you bring up a great point in that this is the version of basketball that Eric Spoelstra has long wanted to see. An offense that is free-flowing, moving the ball, opportunistic, positionless. It was so effective, and it took everybody by surprise in the playoffs. And of course, it led to a very highly successful season for the team. And I think you can't have that without Jimmy. And I think that's a great part along those same lines of what we were talking about, his own ability to morph and fit into everything else kind of fit perfectly into that style of offense. So he brought not just a great attitude and a clear identity, a clear hierarchy to this team that was clearly missing that over the last few seasons with either Josh Richardson or Deion or even older Dwayne Wade having to take up the top spot as far as the locker room personality is concerned. Not this year. It was Jimmy. He brought that attitude. He also brought flexibility and allowed Spo to tinker more with lineups and do things the way he likes to do them. And it worked out to such an incredible degree. So if you're looking at positives, I think it's just an overwhelming, positively great impact for Jimmy in his one season in Miami.
Without a doubt. And we're not even getting to all the things I think he did off the floor for the team chemistry. I mean, him and Goran seem to have such a genuine friendship, but also the confidence he's instilled in guys like Duncan and Tyler Hero. I think what really another thing that really stood out to me during the postseason was how much he made it a point to get the shooters going, to talk up the shooters in pregame and postgame.
He did that all season with Bam. He said he was the best player on this team. Like, I was in that locker room when everybody said, "Oh, you know, you're questioned as the best player in the locker room, et cetera, or you're the best player on this team." He said, "Why y'all think it's me?" And it was just interesting to see him play out that way. Like, he was just constantly, and it felt like at times, knowing his reputation, like maybe it was going so far into the opposite direction of what that reputation was, but I think it was sincere. Like, he was really trying to get everybody to play at a high level and give them that confidence that you were talking about.
For sure. I think he wanted them to believe that they could be a team that made it to the finals, right? I don't, you know, one thing you get in this business over the years is guys will tell you, they might not always tell you in training camp, but they'll tell you they know if a team has a chance to win a championship or not. That's something players are pretty forthcoming about. And I think Jimmy really had that belief from day one, whether it's just his typical kind of overconfidence or not. And I think he really wanted to make sure everyone on the team had that belief, whether it was Tyler in his first year, Duncan really getting his first chance at normal minutes, Bam trying to take in the step. I think he made it a point from day one to make sure that they thought they could make it to the level that they did. I mean, whether those things really make a difference, I don't know. It might just be us talking about it. But I think that confidence definitely paid off for the Heat at several different points during the playoffs.
Did you have any inkling that it would work out this well?
I didn't think they'd make the finals in year one. Certainly not. And it's hard to separate the bubble from it. I think the Heat alluded to that in their, you know, yes, Pat Riley's postseason press conference, where he said
he denied it. He denied it though. Like that was surprising.
But he said, you know, we'll look into see, you know, kind of how much the bubble played into this. And I think they have to know on some level that did play into the success. Not that it takes away from anything Miami did, but just, you know, that situation is just maybe geared towards certain teams, et cetera, whatever. So did I think they'd make the finals in year one? Certainly not. Did I think Jimmy was capable of putting on the finals performance? He did. I don't know that I even thought that was there. So I really think it was just the perfect marriage, the synergy between coaching staff and roster that really kind of elevated everyone. I'm definitely very curious to see how it looks in year two when Duncan's not really, not that he was sneaking up on anyone by the finals, but There's just going to be a different level, I think, of preparation and focus that the Heat are going to face from their opponents over the next year. And I think it's going to be really interesting how they adjust moving forward.
Yeah, that is a huge question for me as well. And I think there were certain weaknesses perhaps that you could point to in Jimmy's game. And of course, now all of a sudden the expectations for this team have changed. And maybe Jimmy is at the forefront of that because he did take this team to a level that they were not expecting to, I think. And so now all of a sudden you're forced to kind of re-examine where you are as a team, as an organization, and make some moves that you might not have been expecting to make. We'll talk about that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Stay up to date on the latest roster changes, rumors, and more by subscribing to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts. Always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. So I'm here with Rowan Notcarney, and we're talking about Jimmy Butler. We talked about the positives in the first segment. There were so many. It was a fantastic season. Of course, Jimmy was at the forefront of that. But he struggled a little bit, at least individually. While he made up for his lack of offense from the free throw line, he was still struggling from the field. Like, that shot was not falling with any kind of regularity. And whether there were a combination of injuries, whether or not it was just wear and tear on a body that's seen a lot of minutes over the course of his career, he was not as great offensively as he had been in the previous season in Philadelphia, perhaps where he had a lesser role. And even before that in Minnesota.
Yeah. That's really the question for Jimmy, is how long can he keep this up without a traditional second scorer with him? You know, obviously Goran was coming off the bench for most of the year in the playoffs, that changed, and he was actually leading the team in scoring headed into the finals. You know, how much of the burden can Jimmy carry without a traditional second scorer, you know, needing a role player to go off like he did every night? I don't think Bam is really at that stage where he's a reliable scorer. He's definitely capable, but I don't know that you're doing what he did against Boston in that game six, where you're giving the ball and saying, go get me a bucket night in and night out. Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Jimmy is going to be how much of the burden can he carry moving forward when there is not a traditional second scorer on the team. And that just gets harder and harder to do when you don't have a reliable jump shot. We saw there's a ceiling on the way he can play that he did in the finals. Obviously, he's not going to do that for a whole regular season, but his body was completely spent by the end of that series. I mean, part of that is also just the defensive burden he's carrying in that situation. But it just becomes very hard to age gracefully without a reliable jump shot. I mean, we've even seen LeBron has had to do it, and he's become a much better outside shooter over the course of his career. We saw him have a couple huge games from three in the finals. And I do wonder if those minutes are going to catch up to him. And that's a big question mark in his game. It's not, can he be effective? We know he can be effective without a jump shot. It's how long can he be effective that way? Because I do think that there's an expiration date on that style of play. And I do think that's why it's imperative. I don't think it's going to be this summer, but sooner rather than later, I do think the Heat are going to need kind of a more reliable second scorer with Jimmy, because guys like Bam and Duncan and Tyler, while they are all capable of having huge nights, they're not necessarily guys who you can give the ball to on a possession, obviously not Duncan, and say, hey, we need a bucket right now. You know, what can you create for us? You know, Tyler was becoming that guy in the playoffs, and we saw in the finals he kind of came back down to earth a little bit. I do wonder how much longer can Jimmy play the way he wants to play.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a clear answer to that too, right? And that's a huge concern, because now I feel like we should probably say this for the next segment, but it all kind of ties together. The reality is now you've got a four-year contract with Jimmy. You already played out to 1 year. You exceeded expectations for that first season. Now what happens next? And obviously, I think you're looking ahead to next season, and there's a good chance that you'll probably take a step back. Like, you went so far, so unexpectedly deep in the playoffs, and now all of a sudden the book is out on what you can and can't do. And I think everybody's more aware of it. You're not, as you said before, taking anybody by surprise. And along those same lines, now you have your leader continuing to age, continuing to regress a little bit as far as his overall playing. Like, I don't think he can take that wear and tear of getting to the line nine times per game. And if that's the case, what's the next evolution for this team? Does everybody have to kind of take a commensurate step up? Do they all have to kind of fill in the gap as Jimmy continues to be less and less of the focal point on the offense? And can this team continue to be as good if Jimmy is not the focal point of this offense? And so that's, like, he's not the guy running it, but he's a He's a guy who, as you said, you throw the ball to and he'll get you either an attempt at the free throw line or a shot in the waning moments of a game. And that's what he's needed for. And so what's the next step for this game? And I don't know that there's a clear answer. So it's almost like you've tied your good fortune to Jimmy Butler, but now you're kind of fall victim to the success that you unexpectedly had. I mean, maybe that's looking a little bit negatively at everything, but I think that's also the reality.
It is going to be interesting. You know, I think that it's just going to be very hard to compare whatever happens in the next 3 years of Jimmy's contract to this first one because of just how weird this first season was with the bubble and everything. You know, this team obviously exceeded expectations, but I do believe the front office has to know that there was a timeline or a plan in place to kind of escalate at the right time. And the Heat have always been, I wouldn't say always, for the most part, I've been, you know, pretty meticulous planners. Things obviously got out of hand in the middle of the last decade. I don't think they want to repeat those mistakes by, you know, handing out big contracts to a team that overachieved. So I do think it's going to be very interesting how they handled this success and how they properly build around Jimmy. Because I do think it would be a mistake to say, okay, we were in the finals, we're there. You know, it's just tweaks from now on. I think that they understand that there is, you know, still some work to do in terms of building a consistent year in, year out finals contender.
And if there was a lesson that I think was learned, much to their chagrin, as far as the close of Dwayne's career, is that they did not maximize his time as much as they possibly could have. Like, obviously, sure, there were the two MVP seasons in 2008 through 2010 before the Big Three era, and even towards the end when they couldn't make the playoffs to send him out on a winning note. I think there are incredible regrets that are interwoven into that front office, and they don't want to make that same mistake with Jimmy. So now they have to maximize this time. They have to continue building from here. And I think that's, you know, that kind of trajectory falls in line with whatever the front office almost always does, except, you know, as you pointed out, the last couple of years. But they're going to have to make some changes. We'll look ahead to see what happens next season and where Jimmy fits into it. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. So here we are talking about Jimmy Butler. We talked about some of the pros, some of the cons of his game last season. And of course, now there are big questions moving forward. How do you think this team does retool? Do they can't rebuild? And as much as we're hearing rumors about the potential of luring Giannis out of Milwaukee and everything else, I don't think that's realistic this offseason. I mean, we're looking at a condensed schedule, 72 games possibly being played out over the next 5 or 6 months. That's going to put even additional wear and tear on Jimmy. Does he sit out games? There are so many questions about how this team moves forward, and they have to make those decisions relatively quickly. They don't have much time to turn things around. Like, the draft is a couple weeks away. Beyond that, then it's the start of the season, almost in early December. And, you know, again, not a lot of time to make these choices. And your franchise, your history, your superstar max player, everything's on the line, and you have to choose correctly.
It's very interesting, but I do think this is going to be a kind of a holding summer for the Heat. You know, I think that they're going to give Goran a big one-year contract. I think that's almost set in stone at this point. What it really, I think, is going to come down to is, are they going to try to in the trade talks for someone like a Drew Holiday or a Bradley Beal, knowing that that is going to severely affect your 2021 summer plans? I just don't see the Heat doing that, because it sounds like they believe they have a really good chance at Giannis. I think the best thing the Heat can hope for this year is to bring everyone back. In an ideal world, you somehow get Crowder back on a one-year deal too, although I wonder if he would be amenable to that, because I do think he played up his value this postseason. But if you're somehow able to get everyone back and you are able to use your mid-level to get one or two guys, maybe one guy who's willing to come to Miami for a year and re-enter free agency next year when things are a little more settled and teams might have a little bit more money, I think that's really your best bet, is adding one piece via the mid-level, maybe a guy who's willing to take a one-year Miami discount. But other than that, I don't see the Heat being able to do anything more drastic other than trying to run it back with the exact same group.
Is there a name in particular that you think fits in best with what Miami's trying to accomplish next season?
It's a really good question. I do think they could use another big. I mean, the dream guy out there is Serge Ibaka, but I think he'll get the kind of deal in Toronto that Goran Dragic is going to get in Miami, maybe a one-year balloon payment. Some people are saying Danilo Gallinari. He's going to have so many suitors. He appeared to have some interest in playing in Miami at the trade deadline, but I'm worried if they couldn't work out a contract then, why would they be able to work out one now?
Yeah.
So I do.
I've already heard that Brooklyn is almost a done deal with him, and I don't know how that's even feasible, but that's what I'm hearing anyway.
Right. I mean, yeah, I guess it's just going to be one of those one-year mid-level deals, you know, and that's really, I think, the kind of guy they could use, another more consistent shooter than Crowder, even though they were a great three-point shooting team last year. We saw what happened, how difficult it was to get offense when his shot wasn't falling. Although, to Crowder's credit, I think he still played really well, engaged defensively, would find those random cuts to the hoop to get his offense going a little bit. So I credit him for that. But I also wonder if they do need a little bit more bulk. Maybe if it's just, I don't know if they believe in Chris Silva more next year, but I think they could use a bruiser big coming off the bench a little bit. I do think a healthy Bam would have been a better foil for Anthony Davis. I wouldn't read too much into that matchup, but I think they could use a little bit more muscle off the bench.
What about, we've talked about this on the show before, and I'm curious at your thoughts, like a Paul Millsap kind of fitting in there, perhaps being the full-time starter, and if you're able to re-sign Crowder, keeping him off the coming off the bench until maybe the playoffs, and seeing whether or not you can replicate what you did in the bubble last season.
I love Paul Millsap. I'm a big Paul Millsap fan.
Same.
I do think he's a backup center at this point in his career. Okay. I don't know that he can be counted on to start. I mean, if he's playing a Myers Leonard role, or maybe he's not playing, you know, very many minutes, I do think the best, you know, production you're going to get out of him is 20 to 24 minutes a night. And he has to be guarding, I think, bigger guys right now, because I don't think he can hang with the stretchy fours on the wing as much as he used to be able earlier in his career, even a year or two ago. I love Paul Millsap. I just think it comes down to, you know, what role is he in? I do like the idea of starting him at center, kind of like what you did with Myers last year, and kind of letting him bang with some of the bigger bodies. You know, who are the centers you're really worried about in the East, at least, and then, you know, maybe finding a different role for him in the playoffs.
So given everything, looking ahead to next season, I mean, it's not a typical exit interview in that Miami likes to leave Jimmy alone. They're not going to get involved in his development. He is who he is, and they're pretty comfortable with that for good reason. So you also have to look ahead to what happens next. Jimmy feels like he has to uphold his part of the bargain in bringing a championship to Miami. So he's clearly going to push himself as much as possible. The team can't exactly get involved and tell him slow down. That's just not who they are. And if he wants to push himself, you know, until the wheels come off, that's who he is. And that's, they'll be comfortable with that. Unfortunately, I think that's just the reality. So what kind of production can we expect from Jimmy? Like, there's not going to be any change to his game. We saw an uptick in his free throw rate. Perhaps more heightened playmaking ability, but I think that's always been an unheralded part of his game. Do you expect a drop off in his level of production next season? I think that's pretty clear, right?
I mean, I don't expect him to do what he was doing during the postseason. We have to remember that Jimmy during the regular season was a lot different player than he was in the finals. And obviously our lasting memories of him are going to be what he did in that series and how thrilling it was, but that's just not him as an 82 game player. I mean, I think everyone's production is going to drop off, David. I mean, we're talking about a short rest, an especially quick turnaround for the Heat and Lakers. I think it's going to be a slog for Jimmy. I do wonder if, for the first time, I think, since Dwayne Wade's last year with the big three, the Heat do kind of try to come up with some kind of maintenance program. I'm very curious how the organization will handle this, if they'll lean into their conditioning, we're going to try to outwork everyone and be in the best shape thing, or understand the rigors. And if this team is really playing for the summer of 2021, the worst thing you can do is run your guys into the ground in this shortened season and create some kind of crazy long-term planning. So I think everyone's production is going to drop a little bit. I don't know how organizationally the Heat are going to approach this season yet, because it's going to be really tricky to get things. This is just such a weird year, man. I don't know that anyone's going to want to max out this year, if that makes sense.
No. Yeah. And you're spot on, but it's like, at the same time, like everything we were talking about before, given the guilt they feel about Dwayne's, you know, years wasted seasons here, Like they kind of have to push all their chips in. So, you know, I waffle on this all the time over the last few weeks since the season ended. I'm like, well, this is going to be a quiet off season. Nothing's going to happen. And even now, as I'm talking about it, it's like, well, they can't afford to take that kind of chance. They can't just back off. If they can make a push for a complimentary star, whether it's a Drew Holiday or anybody else to take some of the pressure off, you kind of have to do it and then see what happens a year from now. Like, you don't want to hamstring yourself. You don't want to handcuff your ability to be flexible. And look, Riley and his presser talked about wanting that flexibility, but man, it's like, I don't know. It's really weird. And then yes, the 72 game schedule, everything's so condensed, no fans in the stands. This is pure chaos. Like, I mean, no other sport at the same time as this is to take our minds off of everything that's going on in the world around us. But there are still so many questions regarding the Heat, about Jimmy's ability to carry this team yet again. And my mind is circling even as I'm thinking about it right now.
Yeah, I don't envy the people who have to make the decisions. I struggle with the decisions I have to make in my life every day. Like, what pair of shorts am I going to wear to work from home?
Should I wear shorts, you know?
Yeah, what time am I going to take my dog out? Is it going to be a 3-walk day? Is it going to be a 4-walk day? I do not envy the decisions the people in charge of the NBA or the teams or the Heat or Jimmy Butler have to make for next year, because it's like you said, it's chaos. It's just going to be chaos.
But it's still great to think ahead, I guess. Like, I mean, Jimmy, I think he's going to do everything possible. I think he's already, even just in one season, and maybe it's because of the difficulties of the year and the external circumstances and everything else, he's ingratiated himself to Heat fans in a way that I don't think was possible. Like, I didn't think it was any chance that he was going to become and instantly become as beloved as he was, given his reputation and everything else. And it's just one season, and he's already been, I think he's like a top 5 player in Heat history, which is strange to say after just 1 year.
Oh no, that final, you're right. You're spot on. That finals performance, it was the combination of him doing that A in his first season, B against LeBron, C on a team with very little expectation to make the finals, and D with half the team hurt, with the next two best guys hurt. It was just truly a performance, not just for the Heat, but in NBA history, like just incredibly well done and incredibly memorable. And I think that you're right. He ingratiated himself in such a way, because I think you could see the physical toll he put on himself to keep the Heat alive in the finals. No one expected them to make, and no one thought they'd win 2 games in after the way, you know, the series started. For him to do that, I think is just, you're right. Top 5. I mean, I'm thinking off the top of my head right now. I mean, it's Dwayne, it's UD, it's Bosch. And then, you know, is it Zoe and Jimmy? Is it Bron and Jimmy? I mean, you know, LeBron's got a complicated legacy here, but what Jimmy did was just, you know, thrilling to watch. It's even in defeat, it's what makes the NBA so appealing, right? It's what makes sports appealing, is that exact kind of performance.
You know, it's funny you mentioned this, because even as I'm thinking about this now, like, I had your former colleague Ben Golliver on the show, and he was pretty upbeat about Jimmy's season in Miami, but he was also pretty honest, and a little too brutally honest for my taste, about what Jimmy was like in Philadelphia and Minnesota and even in Chicago. And he does have such a complicated reputation, and I think it's a lot overstated. But there are people, like people that I trust, and I mean, not just Ben, but others that just don't like Jimmy, or at least it comes across as not liking Jimmy because he's too abrasive and all these other things. And it's just, it's weird for me to kind of wrap my mind around. Pina, to his credit, is a longtime Jimmy supporter. He wrote a great piece for Vice a couple of years ago where he spent time at Jimmy's house and kind of followed him and watched what that personality, that serial killer personality, was like up close. And Golliver is fond of saying that he wrote his first cover story for SI was on Jimmy Butler when he was in Chicago. So, you know, it's just interesting to see how media members kind of gravitate or shy away from a person like Jimmy. He is a divisive personality, to say the least.
Hey man, whatever he did off the court before he got to Miami, I just don't know how you can't love someone who left it all on the floor in the manner that he did in the finals. It just is. It was inspiring. It's been a long time, so I've been inspired by an athletic performance the way I was by Jimmy Butler, who, you know, Bam is a shell of himself. Goran isn't playing. He's going toe-to-toe with two Hall of Famers. And yeah, like I said, long times have been, you know, kind of inspired by performance on that level.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I made the argument that it was probably the best season in Heat history just because of the level of expectation at the start of it and everything they were able to accomplish. And Jimmy was certainly at the forefront of that. He was a big part of it. And he's certainly become a part of Heat fandom forever. I like that image of him doubling over that table is as iconic as it'll get. It'll be up in Championship Alley as soon as media members are allowed in the American Airlines Arena. I'll be sure to report whether or not that image is in fact there. But for now, it doesn't seem likely to happen anytime soon, unfortunately. We'll see what happens. But as always, Rowan, you're more than welcome to come on the show. Whether it's 6 appearances, 8 appearances, 25, we'll have you on here for as long as you're willing to.
Awesome, man. Yeah, we'll have to get the appearances up next season. We'll have to get them up next season.
Well, make sure to follow Rowan if you're not already. If you're listening to his podcast, there's a good chance that you know him and his incredible work. One of the best writers out there. And make sure you do follow him and his great writing and some recent dabbling into the podcast world as well. But I'll continue bringing you the latest rumors and news from around the league, looking ahead to the NBA draft. If you want to stay up to date, what better way to do that than by subscribing and following this podcast to get the latest episodes as soon as they're out. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you as always for your support.